The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the speaker. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice from your own physician.
Hi, I'm Adam Doan. I'm a board-certified neurophysiologist, and I'm co-chair of the NAS section on intraoperative neuromonitoring. I'm here with my colleague and co-chair, Rich Vogel. And today we're going to be talking about teamwork and safety science. So these are definitely hot topics in medicine these days, but how do they apply to the neuromonitoring team? I know I've been to conferences lately and I've listened to some of these talks about teamwork. You know, how does it improve outcomes? What are some of the lessons that we've learned by listening to these sort of things? I think there's some well-known psychological studies that show that if you have a team where people aren't necessarily feel like they're included in the study, it actually leads to not only decreased satisfaction in their job, but potentially bad outcomes as well. Rich, what are some of the things that you've seen that maybe that are hot topics in like safety science or team science that sort of would work for the neuromonitoring community as well?
Well, I think one thing that jumps out to me is that if you just step back and think about what neuromonitoring is supposed to do. So you've got a neuromonitoring team, generally consistent with an oversight professional and a technologist who are working together, and they are there to detect change and report change. And just going back to this, you know, studies in psychology, the idea is that if somebody doesn't feel like they're part of the team, if they don't feel included, they're less likely to speak up when the time comes. And really, that's at the end of the day, that's their only job, is to say, wait, I'm seeing something, there's a problem here. And if somebody is sort of isolated in their position, they come into the OR every day, they're maybe not an employee of the hospital, and they come in, and because they're not an employee, they tend to get treated differently, they're not wearing the same clothes, they're not talked to. And they start to feel isolated, and that makes it psychologically challenging for them to just do their job and feel not just that they're a part of the team, but like they should speak up when they can speak up. And the other side of that is not feeling a level of appreciation and satisfaction when they go to work every day. To them, they might not feel like a member of your team, but to them, if you're working in the OR, you are their team, their coworkers every day. And so I think it can be psychologically challenging in and of itself for somebody to just do their job and do it consistently and do it accurately on a daily basis.
Yeah, I read this article not too long ago, and it was talking about this study that was done by the Anesthesia Patient Safety Foundation. And it really surprised me. And I saw a lot of parallels there as well, where basically I think it was 29% of anesthesiologists feel like they have meaningful communication with the surgical team on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And that same 29% felt like the surgeons didn't even know their names. They were, hey, anesthesia. I know sometimes in the neuromonitoring community, we've heard these same things as well. It's, hey, neuromonitoring. They don't have that same type of relationship. What are things that can be done to sort of foster that teamwork, that collegiality, and mutual respect for one another?
So I know that you and I have had similar experiences, and we've certainly seen what works and what doesn't. And a couple of things that come to mind for me are simply including neuromonitoring in the timeout. So everybody goes around the room and they express their concerns, but here's a good time for the neuromonitoring team to say, I have baselines, everything looks good, or not, because they have this moment in time that's reserved for them, and it's not more than 5 seconds, right? Another example is a preoperative huddle. I know that you and I had previously worked at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where before every case, they have this huddle that's the anesthesiologist, the surgeon, the neurophysiologist, and they just talk about plans for surgery, potential risks, concerns, and everybody has an opportunity to speak. And it's just a great method to get everybody on the same page. We've seen things come up where somebody mentions a drug that might be administered, and somebody else mentions, well, that might be a problem for us to be able to get motors, for example. And just having that level of communication before surgery and figuring out what's the best plan for everybody to work together is a huge benefit.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're doing the same types of cases with the same team over and over again, It probably means that that pre-op huddle likely doesn't happen before every single case, but certainly before cases that are a little bit, you know, they stand out, they might be unique, there might be, you know, increased complexity. So, you know, at least for those types of cases. And then the complement to that, of course, is the post-op debrief as well. If things go great, maybe that's, you know, hey, great job, everybody. But when things don't go as according to plan, that's a good opportunity to, you know, talk through things to figure out, well, what can we do differently to do better, you know, the next time. So, you know, there can be like a mini discussion at that point. And then if it goes further than that into, you know, something like, you know, something that's discussed more formally after the fact, like an M&M inclusion in that as well. Because I think, you know, having the neuromonitoring voice when neuromonitoring played a role in the case is something that's beneficial to the whole team to build that sort of professionalism.
Yeah, and one more thing that I would think of what I know works well is incorporation of an intraoperative checklist. So it's one thing to have a checklist in your head. It's another thing to have it on the wall. And then you could take it a step further and make sure that everybody on the team understands what the components of that checklist are. And when things go wrong, everybody's prepared for how to respond to that. So not just having a checklist, but actually using it and making sure everybody's on board with it.
Agreed. So what about the opposite? What are some things that you've seen in your career that maybe do the opposite, is make the neuromonitoring team feel like they're a little bit more isolated?
So it's a cascade of events, I think. Over the past few years, we've gotten to a point where neuromonitoring is probably about two-thirds of all neuromonitoring in the U.S. is probably outsourced to whether it's small private practices or corporations. And hospitals tend to think of them as vendors. So they come in and they have to wear these scrubs, these paper scrubs and these red hats, and they're immediately flagged as being somebody who doesn't belong. As a result of that, the next thing that happens in this cascade is they get limited or no access to critical information for doing the monitoring, such as the patient, the patient's chart, the patient's imaging. All of those things would be important because the neuromonitoring team needs to understand not just develop a relationship with the patient to perform the neuromonitoring, but understand what in that patient's medical history on that day, on that morning, may contribute to the presence or absence of, or even abnormality of signals that are recorded at baseline. And that's a tremendous benefit when those things can happen. But oftentimes, they don't happen, and this lack of information is problematic and causes a lot of false positives and false negatives when you take it from a holistic perspective and look across the nation at these trends. So those are big problems, I think. What about you? Do you have any things that you've observed?
Yeah, I think that's it. It's that access to the same sort of things that somebody who's employed by the hospital would have. So. Do we have access to the imaging? Do we have access to the patient in pre-op? Do we have the access to the patient in PACU? Do we have lockers? Do we have not necessarily our own parking spaces because nobody typically has that, but do we have access to, you know, parking that is conducive to being on call? Because, you know, I've heard about that as well, where somebody has to park half a mile away and, you know, basically push their equipment, you know, through the snow in a big outdoor parking lot or something like that. So it's just looking for ways to make the neuromonitoring team inclusive. If they're not employed by the hospital, you know, still look for those opportunities to give them that those same sort of, you know, access in order to make them feel included, make them better at their job. And then I think beyond that, the last thing is, you know, those are different things that can be done. But what about extra things that can be done with the surgical team, with the neuromonitoring team, to sort of build, you know, professionalism, collegiality?
I think one thing that really jumps out to me is in services and grand rounds. So if you have a neurosurgical or orthopedic surgical or anesthesiological grand rounds, invite the neuromonitoring team to participate, whether that's to observe and learn more about surgery and why things are done surgically, or to even come in and talk to you and your colleagues and your residents and fellows about neuromonitoring so that everybody has a better understanding of how it's deployed. We used to have at one hospital, they had something in the morning called bone boards, where everybody would talk about, it was at 6 a.m., and everybody would talk about the cases that came in the night before and the surgeries that were going to be done that day, what was going to be done surgically, and inviting neuromonitoring to that to that meeting was very beneficial because they were able to see what was being done surgically and why, and have a better understanding of the clinical presentations of the patients and how neuromonitoring was going to be deployed during those surgeries that day. So that's a big example for me, is just involve the neuromonitoring team in these extracurricular activities that you do for your own continuing education. That allows them to get better at their job as well and to understand what it is that you're doing surgically and why. And that's the level of teamwork, I think, that we need in order to really advance the best patient care that we can.
Agreed. And last but not least, learn each other's names. You know, a little thing like that goes a long way.
Goes a long way.
All right. Well, I think that probably wraps it up for this one. And thank you for listening.